And here I had what might be important information that, you know, in good conscience, how could I stick it in a drawer? And I really, really fought with that for many years. But getting back to how the sighting affected people and how anomalous experiences affect people at a very, very deep level, even in real time, I have to tell you, it's very interesting. This is an interesting anecdote. You know, 6 months before the mass sighting, the movie Independence Day came out. And I have to tell you, I mean, we address it in the documentary. We are so inundated and taught that to be fearful and that it's a threat. And I'm not saying everything's benevolent out there, but I do have to say that in 15 years, March 13th, there has not been not one report of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights. And that's all I can speak for. But that's telling in and of itself. Anyway, in real time, when this phenomenally large, mile to 2 mile wide formation of lights or craft were coming towards, you know, kids, they were jumping up and down, Independence Day, Independence Day. And they were scared. But as it got closer, not only children, but adults as well, a calmness took over them, a sense of connection to the phenomena. And you would hear this over and over and over again. And not everyone, okay, let's be clear. You know, everybody comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, from a different belief system. Some people can't deal with this. Some people don't want to deal with it. And that's okay. That's okay, everyone in their own time. But those who truly experienced the Phoenix Lights were transformed in real time. I mean, the kids, as it passed over, kids wanted to run after it, and adults wanted to, you know, follow it. I mean, it's so interesting when you see that kind of transformation and change in real time. That this thing, whatever it was, whoever it was, really affected people very, very strongly in real time. And then, when I was doing my research, I actually found another connection, which was very interesting. I mean, I had witnesses say to me that they had had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And I find that very curious because I did too. And I go into detail about my own childhood near-death experiences in the book, The Phoenix Lights of Skeptics, Discovery That We Are Not Alone. But what I found really poignant is that the thought occurred to me, whoa, you know, if they, and the same thing happened to me. I mean, my near-death experience that I had buried for over 40 years was reawakened by the Phoenix Lights. Maybe there's a connection between all unexplained phenomena, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience. And lo and behold, when I started looking again, I started finding such credible data. I mean, besides the whole history with that we can get into with not only primitive caves, but in the Bible and the 15th and 16th century paintings and Foo Fighters, which Dr. Richard Haynes conferred with me on my close sighting and said that, you know, the orbs that my husband and I saw in the rock-solid pyramid formation are identical to what each side was seeing during World War II. And it wasn't in everybody thought that somebody had this advanced spy technology. They called them Foo Fighters. And it wasn't until after the war that each side, Germany, Japan, U.S., tried to study these things, and everybody realized there was no spy technology. What was
it?
Been around, you know, a long, long time. And
Each thought it was the other, and they found out it wasn't any of them.
Exactly, exactly. And then when you fast forward and you, I mean, I have pictures of the Lubbock Lights. I mean, they're so similar, Lubbock Lights, and we have the, you know, certainly the Hudson Valley triangles in UK and Belgium in the 80s and 90s, and even 1 month before ours, I have video, stunning video, of the same exact craft that people were seeing throughout Arizona, was seen and videotaped in St. Petersburg, Russia, 1 month before our mass sighting.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. February 19th.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And in fact, That particular one of the videos, we now have on the third edition, the latest edition of our documentary DVD cover, because I had mentioned the GAP program, Geospatial Animation Project. There were 8 or 9 different craft that people saw, and this is a compilation of hundreds from reports all over the state. Whether it was one craft that could morph into looking differently, or it was a parade of different craft, or it was the perspective from where the person was standing, we may never know. But it seems from all the reports that there were a lot of things going on. I mean, it wasn't just one or two events, and I really want to get into that, because Dr. Bruce McAbee just reanalyzed essentially the only hard evidence that we have during the mass sighting, and again has reported. He just came out with a report about a month ago. With now that we have state-of-the-art, technology with Google Earth and GPS and so forth, to essentially say what he had said before, but most people didn't read it. And one of the misconceptions, and I just want to make that clear while we're on the topic, is that there were two events. I mean, this is a total disinformation, misconception, whatever, but people obviously have not looked at the data, or they would know better, because there were many events for many, many hours. But what the media and debunkers have grabbed onto is that the earlier sightings, and like I said, they started in the afternoon. So the bulk of the reports, however, came in between 8 and 9:30, something like that, 8 to 10. And that's when most people were outside looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet. So that makes, that makes sense. And then the videos around 10 o'clock, and there were two of us that caught videos before 10 o'clock, and two boomerang videos after 10 o'clock. And my video is of the three points of light, giant, massive span, like I'm, at least a mile wide, of equidistant lights, three lights, like the end points of a V or triangle, which was described by thousands of people statewide for the previous hours, appeared shortly before 10 o'clock, and by the way, was confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers, again, as being in Class B restricted airspace, about 1,000 feet altitude, and then moving as a unit, and behind the mountain range. Anyway, Dr. Bruce McAbee went back to the videos. One of the videos is still being under investigation, but he has now made a report substantiating again, and this is his opinion, that the two boomerang videos are totally different set of lights than mine. Okay? They're at a great distance from Phoenix. He surmises that they're close to the gunnery range and that they are most likely flares deployed by the Maryland Air National Guard. Mine, however, it's a totally different animal, totally different set of lights that is near and over Phoenix, and certainly confirmed to be by the air traffic controllers, is different in configuration and timing and spacing from the boomerangs, and remains unidentified. So in other words, by the way, this was stated in a couple of lines in his very extensive report that he did in 1998 that appeared in the MUFON International Journal, that most people don't bother to read. They just assume that all the videos around 10 o'clock are flares. That is not the case. Okay? And now we have substantiation by Dr. Bruce McAbee, Navy optical physicist who's very well respected in the field, that shows that my video may be essentially the only hard evidence at this point.
Now, your video, did you shoot that yourself?
Yes. Well, to me, it was another night. To me, it was, I had been, again, just to go back so we understand how the things unfolded. After our closed sighting, again, I knew nobody to even show the pictures to, so I just wondered for 2 years what this advanced technology was doing outside of our bedroom window. And 2 months before the mass sighting, this is 2 years later, 2 months before the mass sighting in January of 97, I noticed three orbs, but this time in a line formation, an equidistant line formation far west. And I just watched them for minutes, and I saw that they were in a formation. They were strangely similar to 95, and that they, even though they were a distance, and that they were orbs, they were big balls of light that were in a formation, equidistant from each other, and hovering for minutes. And then they seemed to implode from the outside inwards again, from right to left, like one, two, three, and they were gone. The next night, my husband was at a hospital board meeting. At the time, he was on several state and hospital medical boards. And I happened to notice the same three lights in the equidistant line now were in front of South Mountain. Now, I knew they were in front of the mountain because there are red blinking lights on the highest part of the mountain to alert planes coming into Sky Harbor Airport, which is right in front of just north of South Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And they were lower. They were definitely lower. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get video of this. And I ran out with my video camera, which was fully charged at the time. And I got about 18 seconds worth, and then my battery went dead, which is, I guess, interesting in itself. And I ran in, hooked up the battery, ran out. They were gone. This is about 8 o'clock on January the 23rd, 1997. And I hear my husband come up the drive, and I went outside, and I said, remember I told you about the three lights far north last night in a row? Well, about a half hour ago, they were right in front of South Mountain. And as I'm standing there pointing to where they were, they reappeared in the same spot.
Wow.
Okay? And I thought, oh, my goodness, I've got to get a picture. So here comes another coincidence, and I've come not to believe in coincidence, because your video does not do these lights justice. And anyone that's seen the video, they flicker, they're white, they're much smaller. Whoever thought up the flare idea was brilliant, I have to tell you, because they look much more like flares in the video than they do in real life. In real life, they're huge balls of what seems like energy. At any rate, I was, you know, getting the battery charged for the video, and video is very hard to analyze, but 35 millimeter is terrific to analyze. So even better than digital, because digital, the pixels break up when you try to get close. And I ran upstairs, I grabbed my 35 millimeter, got out on the balcony, and just as I'm ready to shoot the three, suddenly six pop on top of the three. Massive span, equidistant from each other. It was unnerving. And if you look at the photos of the photo page on the phoenixlights.net, you'll see that it's kind of wavy. Well, it's because I'm shaking, I have to tell you. I was shaking. It was unnerving because it was so massive. Not having an explanation from 95, it was like, oh my goodness, is this a mothership or a fleet or what is this? But I started clicking away. And at that point, I got six pictures in a row of this phenomena head-on turning into a V-shape, and you can see it. And actually, the second picture is phenomenal, because if you look at that second picture, you can see one light in the center is brighter than the two on each side, and there's two underneath. There seems to be two orbs underneath. Well, that's exactly, this is 2 months before the mass sighting, but that's exactly what most people would describe during, many, many people would describe, during the mass sighting, five lights in a V formation with two trailing, which, that's a picture of it 2 months before. And then as I continue clicking away, you can see how the object turned. And, you know, what we're looking at, because every other light is bigger than the ones in between, is, and this has, again, been extensively analyzed, is most likely what I captured were these lights either with a field in between, because you could see through it. You could see through to the other side. Or they were separate objects that were just in rock-solid formation. At any rate, you know, that was so unnerving that I did call the next morning. I called around and found the air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor. And, you know, they were more excited than I was, actually. It was really funny because the guy that I met with, one of the air traffic controllers, is a really mellow guy. And he got on the phone, finally, after I searched someone down that had seen it. And he was more excited than me. He said, did you see the six lights that were equidistant from each other at 8:30 last night? I said, yes, that's why I'm calling. He says, well, there were actually three at 8 o'clock. I said, I saw them, too. And at that point, he says that they were alarmed because they were about 1,000 feet altitude, and over Class B restricted airspace. There's a 30-mile radius around the center of the airport where anyone that comes into that airspace, particularly 1,000 feet altitude, must call into the tower, and nobody called. So they looked at the radar, nothing on radar. They took their binoculars to look, and what they saw, in his own words, were 6 points of light, massive span, totally equidistant from each other, that seemed to be attached to something. People would say that over and over again on March 13th, too. But they couldn't quite see what it was attached to. And this one guy was a meteorologist, and he said it turned against the wind. And I happened to catch pictures as it was happening, and then moved as a unit behind South Mountain. And when I said, so what was it? There was silence, and then finally one of the guys said, beats me. And I said, you're air traffic controllers. You're supposed to know it's in our airspace. They had no idea what it was, and I continued photographing these things up into and including March 13th when the advertisement comes on for the news, I guess about 10 of 10, and my husband and I were in bed already. And there wasn't a thing, by the way, on the news about it, or I would have been prepared with my camera. And suddenly we see 6 lights pop up on the same location as 2 months before. And by the time I got out there with my camera and got on my robe and got out there and focused the camera, was totally out of focus. I captured the 3, like the end points of a giant triangle. So, you know, we have confirmation from the air traffic controllers the next morning that not only did they see him again in the same exact location as 2 months before as I had, but a pilot called in on approach to the airport to say, what the hell are these lights over me? There was a lot going on. I mean, there's so much more to this story.
When we talk about these things, it's confusing, I'm sure, to everybody, because we're not really sure if they're real physical objects or some sort of other dimensional thing or whatever. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Jerry, because, you know, having seen the closed sighting, and I have to say, not only did it feel once these orbs disappeared that they were still there, but they felt like they were still there for weeks after. I mean, it was really eerie, I have to say. And, you know, now, and I'll get to the close sighting again, an analysis, Dr. Bruce McAbee also analyzed those pictures. And as an afterthought, actually, I had sent him another sighting that happened a year after the mass sighting. In fact, I had hired a geological professor from ASU, Arizona State University, to try to triangulate the 4 videos around 10 o'clock. And he first went to Mike Christen's house. He did the giant boomerang that everybody sees on TV. And he shot his about 10:15 after 10. And then he came to my house, and he said, so you saw yours, you know, after 10 o'clock, quarter after 10, whatever. I said, oh, no. Mine was more like quarter of 10 of 10. He said, well, wait a minute. And he says, well, when did the other people capture theirs? And what we realized was that everybody captured their footage at a different time, and they were different looking things. I mean, mine looks like the 3 points, the end points of a V or triangle. The other one before 10 o'clock is more like an arrowhead. And then the 2 after 10 o'clock are boomerangs. He says, you can't triangulate these things. It's impossible. They're different things, and they're different times. He said it could have been totally different events. And he actually stormed out. He was quite distraught that he couldn't do the job. So here, a year after the mass sighting, we had another sighting, which was very different. I want to make that clear. Very different from the mass sighting. This time, there were straight lines and mirror images and a giant triangle, like a pyramid, but giant, in the same spot again, I have to say, as a grand finale. But this time I had alerted 3 other people. I had seen the lights. It was the first time I had seen them through a very thick fog. And we don't have fog here. It was eerie in itself that the weekend you couldn't even see past our street. And my husband would joke, you know, that they could be there watching us. But it was a little bizarre, and suddenly on Monday night, we were outside on the balcony, and I see two of these orbs, very muted because of the fog, appear behind my husband's head, and I thought, oh my goodness, are they back? Because I hadn't seen anything since March 13th, 97, and this was January of 98. And I ran in and took video, and I looked similar on video, but I wasn't sure, and when I had met with the University of Arizona, they had said to me my equipment was very subpar equipment, and they said if these lights come back, you need to get better equipment and professional equipment. So I called them up the next morning, and I told them, I don't know if they're back, but these look similar, although they're muted. What should I get? And I ran around all day the next day, getting a top-of-the-line Pentax camera with a tele-lens and a star filter and all this stuff. And that night they did come back. And I got incredible pictures, by the way, that night. And it just so happened, again, a little coincidence, that we had a meeting the next morning, the third day, at Village Labs. And I shared with them that I had seen the lights the two previous nights. And I just had a feeling that they might be back the third night. So to alert the other videographers. And I have to say, I mean, I really stayed anonymous. There were very, very few people that knew who I had, who I was, and what I had.
This is before you went public, huh?
Oh yeah, so it's 7 years. Yeah. But I mean, I'm telling you, a handful of people knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, I asked them to please contact the other people, and which they did. And there were four of us at four different locations, north, south, east, and west, that captured this 40-mile-wide, 20-minute array of these lights. Again, very different from the mass sighting. In fact, I talk about my conversations with the military the next day, because I called around the next morning to see if anything was going on with the military. And not only did they say that we couldn't see, you know, if they were sending off flares, even though it was foggy, and they probably weren't, you know, we couldn't even see them from our vantage point. But besides that, one of them said, laughingly, you know, but he was serious, and I kind of giggled to myself. He said, if you saw a line of flares, 8 or 9 flares, and that was us. I mean, you know, were they trying to cover themselves? I don't know, but that's what he said. This was very different. There was nothing like that in 98. But anyway, I had the videos from north, south, east, and west, and I figured I had heard about Dr. Maccabee, and I had been referred to him by Linda Moulton Howe and a few other people, and I contacted him. And as an afterthought, when I sent the videos, I also sent the first and the last picture from 1995, the closed sighting. And he calls me up a couple weeks later, and to answer your question from before, how different people react, from day one, my husband would not talk about it. I mean, he would get agitated when I brought it up. He was inside, I was outside. Did something happen? I don't know. But nonetheless, he would not talk about it. And this is, you know, like 3 years later, Dr. McAvey comes to me and he says, now you told me that the closed sighting was just a few minutes long. I said, that's right. I said, that's what I remember. He said, ask your husband to corroborate. And I said, he won't talk about it. He said, you've got to sit him down and just find out how long that sighting was in 95. Which I did, and he confirmed, you know, 3-4 minutes tops. I went back to Bruce, Dr. Maccabee, and told him, and he said, that's impossible. I said, what do you mean? And he said, look at the pictures. And if anybody's near the Phoenix Lights website, Phoenix Lights Network website, you know, if you get on the photo page, you'll be able to see it quite clearly. In the first picture, he says, first of all, there's 4 lights in a row in the background, in the same spot as 2 months before the mass sighting and during the mass sighting. And in the last picture, there's 2 in the background. So these phenomena were there in the background when we had our closed sighting. So you could speculate, I guess, that, you know, perhaps like people that reported these orbs detaching from the main object, going out in the environment, and then redocking with it, perhaps that's what happened to us in 95. But to go one step further, he says, now look at the skyline. I said, okay. And I would have never, Jerry, I would have never in a zillion years ever noticed this. He said, there's many groups of lights on in the first picture that are off in the last picture. He said, that doesn't happen in 2-4 minutes. He said, I'd like you to do an experiment. And he asked me to stand approximately where I was standing in 95 and take a picture of the skyline. Now, this is 3 years later, but take a picture of the skyline and see when groups of lights would start going out. Now, I usually take a bath when we're home between 7 and 8 in the evening. So let's be conservative and say 8 o'clock. My husband called me out of the bath. And the first groups of lights start going out at 9 o'clock. The last picture is indicative of 10:30, 11 o'clock. Now, at the time, I had no idea what he was talking about, could not wrap my head around any of it. He says to me, can I present this case at the upcoming 1999 MUFON International Symposium in Washington, D.C.? And I said, hey, you know, number one, I would have never, ever noticed any of this. This is your baby. You discovered it. And he was very meticulous. If you look at the study, and we have the 21-page report on the Phoenix Lights Network website, I mean, it is just so bizarre. There's just so much more to the story that I couldn't even go there. But he presented it in 1999, and I never told a soul for over a dozen years, as the first authenticated photographic evidence ever. And I have to tell you, I mean, it took me a dozen years to not only decide to come forward with it, but to tell you, even to this day, it is so out there and so bizarre to me that, you know, and I don't remember anything other than what I shared with you, that I don't even go there. But now that quantum physics and quantum mechanics has caught up, and I was asked to actually do another book of what has happened since I came forward, and I don't want to write another book. I think there's too many important things in the first book, and again, it was a 750-page journal that I squeezed the best of what I found into 230 pages. Plus, you know, I have to tell you, I mean, with quantum physics and quantum mechanics now postulating the bubble theory and string theory, that there might be 10 or 11 different dimensions out there, and having experienced the closed orbs myself and feeling that it was interdimensional. They disappeared to somewhere, but felt like they were still there. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense. That, you know, if there's other times and spaces along with ours, then why is it such a leap to think that there might be other intelligences that we get glimpses of if we're open to them or invited? And, you know, I have to tell you again, Jerry, I have come not to believe in coincidence. You know, at this point, if I have this data, again, how can I stick it in a drawer? Maybe it's important. Maybe it can help open that door a little bit to realize that linear time, past, present, and future, that we believe in so strongly, is not really what time is at all. And that there is so much more of a of another reality out there that we have yet to appreciate. So that's why I'm sharing that data now, if people care to look at it. And I certainly, again, hope that, that scientists will take a look at it. I mean, it is what it is.
Now, let's talk about what is available for people to investigate that you've done, things that are available. You have the documentary. You have the book. Tell me a little bit about what all you have out there.
Well, first of all, I wanted to, you know, first I came forward with the book, and I had gone back to work. I pushed my entire professional life aside for 4 years to try to find a logical source of meaning, and I have yet to find it 15 years later. But I had to go back to work to help put our younger son through medical school. He's now a neurologist, and I was working as the chief clinical consultant of the Wellness and Imaging Center at the Arizona Heart Institute, the renowned Arizona Heart Institute, while I was paring down the book. And when I came forward in 2004 with the book, I have to tell you, Jerry, I had no idea what the reaction was going to be. It was really precarious, not only because I had such a successful medical career and had been out there, you know, imparting poignant messages to kids for the last 35 years on the reality of vital health issues, but I knew in my heart of hearts that I had to impart the reality of this issue, if it was that important, and it seemed that important. And when I came forward in 2004, I didn't know what the reaction was going to be. I mean, it was scary, to tell you. And I had done so much soul searching what to do. I wanted to remain anonymous, but I knew if I did, the book would sit on a shelf. And because I've been doing this for so many years, I thought if I could lend that credibility and help get this information out there in a credible way, in a professional way, then how could I not do that, particularly as an educator and certainly as an experiencer as well and as a scientist. So when I came forward, the response, I have to tell you, Jerry, was phenomenal. It was amazing. I had no idea how many people out there, and I have tens of thousands of emails from people appreciating the fact that somebody came forward to say it's okay to talk about this, and there's something out there. I mean, I'm not saying what they are. I don't know what they are. And it's time that we get this out there, and it's time we study it, and it's time we move forward, not only to find out who's driving these things, but certainly in our own evolution, because there is so much more to the story. I mean, it's affected people at such a deep level, not only the Phoenix Lights, but certainly other unexplained phenomena, which I call UPS, unexplained phenomena, because the after effect of these phenomena for those who truly experience it is mind-boggling and world-changing.